Welcome back to the program. Religion, or more specifically faith today, like almost everything else in our society, has become polarized. The irony is that the very discussion about those things which should be the model for tolerance have become intolerant. How do we reconcile this, and how can faith, doubt, and even uncertainty become mainstream again? How can we push back against the forces of religion and political extremism in a way that truly renews our freedom of choice? Joining us this morning is a man who's seen these issues from many sides, from the evangelical extreme to his own doubts and questioning. He is Frank Schaefer. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller Keeping Faith, and most recently the memoir Crazy for God. It is my pleasure to have him here to talk about his new book, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion. Frank Schaefer, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Is this an issue that we can address in a vacuum, or is this discussion about extremism with regard to religion part of the broader sense of extremism that polarization that affects so many aspects of our society today?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, and my own life is really an example of this. If you look at where I came from, which is a fundamentalist childhood as a missionary kid in Switzerland in the 50s and 60s, and watch my family go from saving souls for Jesus, as they would have seen it then, to a point where Dad was hanging around with Ronald Reagan, the Bush family, Gerald Ford, and others, crafting policy for the Republican Party to bring in people who had gone to church looking for Jesus and now turn them into political foot soldiers for an emergent religious right. You can see a trajectory there in which original religious intent was derailed, sometimes with good intentions, sometimes with bad intentions. But the net result was a couple of things, if you fast forward to the present. You know, the Republican Party is now a part of, or even just a wing of, the religious right movement. You saw that in the nomination of Sarah Palin by right. McCain. And he did that for only one reason, and that was he had to throw a sop to people like Pat Robertson and James Dobson in order to get them on board, even though he didn't like Sarah Palin, even though he had called people like Robertson agents of intolerance just a few years before. That's the curve. And as folks who've read my memoir, Crazy for God, know, I lived through it all. I was part of it. I was a member of the religious right, got out in the mid-80s, and since then have become a vociferous critic of not just the religious right, but the whole politicizing of every single issue that confronts us today, moral, religious, or otherwise. And, of course, patience with God, this new book I've written, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, is really directed at trying to recalibrate, or if, as it were, restart a real conversation that isn't just a matter of political posturing in religious terms.
But the problem seems to be that we can't separate the two, that it's difficult to talk about faith and questioning and tolerance without talking about the broader political framework that sort of tied all of this together.
Well, I confront this problem in my book, maybe successfully, maybe not, in a very straight-up way, and that is I, first of all, analyze both the new atheist movement that's a reaction to the reaction, in which you have weird things, for instance, like Christopher Hitchens turning into the major supporter of the Iraq War when here he was a former leftist who was an anti-imperialist.
Right.
His reaction to religion is so strong, he hates it so much now that, you know, if we're going to bomb Islamic people or whatever it may be, he's all for it. And then on the other hand, you've got this group continuing with their apocalyptic fantasies represented by people like Tim LaHaye and his book, 16 novels, the Left Behind
right.
series that have sold millions of copies. So the first part of my book, basically, I just try to show, look, these movements are one and the same. You can change the labels, the underlying philosophy may be different, but both the tone and the result is the same. It's just more culture war. And then I turn the page and I say, look, the real issue is the human issue. It's not one of grandstanding over one another or trying to be certain about things. It's really a fact that we've got to embrace the paradox, for instance, about spirituality, that we're evolved creatures from single-celled amoeba, as it were, a few moments ago, geologically speaking, and here we are pontificating about the universe and everything in it, the way Hitchens and Dawkins do on one side, or Billy Graham or my late father would have on the other, giving, quote, the Christian answer. And I say, look, there's a whole other thread that runs through philosophy and religion that depends on nuance, shades of gray, embracing uncertainty. Doubt is seen as a good thing, not a bad thing. And the only enemy of this free-thinking, tolerant view of things is false certainties. And I go a step further. I say all certainties are, when it comes to these big questions, false certainties, because no one lives long enough to know, on one hand. And secondly, we're very young in the evolution of the human species. We're just discovering what ethics means to us, for instance. And so I'm trying to change the conversation by shifting it from the big issues, which I deal with in the first half of Patients with God, to what I think is the real issue, and that is really simple. What kind of a human being am I? How did I get there? Where am I going? Where are you going? Who are we? And on that level, we're all on the same level playing field. And correct belief, whether it's belief in Hitchens' books or in the Bible, is not the issue. The issue is, who are we? How do we want to get there? How are we helping along our moral and ethical evolution, whether we want to do it in the name of atheism, agnosticism, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, or none of the above? The fact is, we have a spiritual dynamic, and we need to address that. Okay, we can't pretend it's not politicized. I don't. I blog all the time about the political ramifications of what I see as a very evil movement in the religious right and the way they're trying to constrict freedoms and so forth. And, you know, now today we even have stories coming out about how certain religious right members are involved with the Ugandan political machinery that's right, trying to bring a death penalty against gay people. So sure, we've got to speak up, but at the same time, let's not lose track of the real issue, and that is the content of our characters. Who are we, and how do we get there? And that's what my book, Patients with God, talks about, the politics, but also what I think is the bigger question, and that is spiritual growth.
Is it your sense, traveling around the country, talking to people as you have, as you've written these books over the years, that the majority of people are trying to find this middle ground, that perhaps those of us that deal with these issues get too caught up in the extreme rhetoric on both sides, but that there is this larger middle out there?
Well, actually, it's interesting you bring that up, because the way this book came about was exactly what you've just said. It was that discovery on my part. When I wrote Crazy for God, my memoir, subtitled How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back, you know, I had left the religious right in the mid-80s and was completely cut off from them by the 90s, both because they were ignoring me and hated me, and I was writing my novels like Portofino and Zermatt, Saving Grandma, Baby Jack. I was making some films and so forth, and so I was out of it. And when I wrote my memoir, I told my wife, Jeannie, I said, oh, wow, we are in for it now. These guys are going to come after me, and I'm going to just be deluged with hate mail. I bet you I'll be changing my email address within a month. The exact opposite happened. I did get some hate mail. There are some nasty reviews on the blog sphere. But the amazing thing was, and I'm not exaggerating, I got 2,000 or 3,000, literally, emails from people telling me their stories, saying, look, you know, in the same time frame that you left, I did too. I got out. You know, former pastors, evangelical people who had been in leadership positions, at least locally, many ordinary folks who would just try to raise their family on the basis of biblical fundamentalism, and it didn't work. And there's a huge group of people out there, just speaking from the point of view of my little neck of the woods, which is that slice of evangelical America. I don't say that represents everybody, but my little slice of the woods. You know, there's a huge group of people who have taken a similar journey to mine, and it was a stunning surprise to me. It was not the same community that I had stomped out of, as it were, and slammed the door on so many years ago. It had changed, and I don't mean the evangelical community as a whole has changed or that their leadership has come around, but many individuals had. And I'll give you one example. In the last election cycle, about 25% to 30% of people interviewed in exit polls who identified themselves as evangelical Christians but who were under the age of 30 voted for Barack Obama. Well, that's unthinkable back in my day of the 70s and 80s when everything was a litmus test and you had to vote around long moral lines. And I think part of that change is the bad job George Bush did in office, the horrendous job he did. So people reacted to that. I mean, here they had the born-again president in office, and he ran the country into the ground with his anti-government stuff and deregulation and an unnecessary war in Iraq, and on it goes. You know, and there's a lot of young evangelicals looking around and a lot of non-evangelicals saying, look, you know, how did we wind up in a country where torture became legal and supported by the government, but healthcare reform is something we're all scared of and call communism or socialism? How'd we get here? So I'm not the only person by any means asking these questions, and one of the reasons Crazy for God, I think, has been successful in generating the response it has from my readers and why they tell me their stories, and by the way, why I answer all those emails and stay in communication with so many people, is because there is a shift away from simply taking it as a given that forever we're going to be in this black and white, right versus left, evangelical versus secular, polarized universe. And that brings me to why, in the opening parts of Patience with God, I go after Dawkins and Hitchens and these other very, very, very loud and definite, you know, sort of atheists who speak with the same kind of tone of writing off everybody else as stupid and evil who disagrees with them that I found in my own fundamentalist background. Because I think that part of the problem is that it isn't just the issues that need to be discussed. We have to get back to a tone which reflects our actual position in life when it comes to spirituality, which is that we're all ants on the roadside of a freeway. You know, we see something blurred go by mighty fast once in a while. You know, we collect a few grains of crumbs to drag back to our nest, and then we die. You know, we're lost in a big universe, and this sort of pontificating on philosophical issues that then results, whether it's Bill Maher sneering at religious people on one hand, or somebody like Rick Warren saying the only way you'll find a purpose-driven life is to accept Jesus, this sort of absolutism, I think, is the root of our problem.
Is there a younger generation of evangelicals coming along that are seeing that this polarization that you're talking about is not doing a service to their cause and to their faith, and that want to approach it from a different way?
I think so. I mean, look, you know, one of the shocking realities right now that has infuriated me, speaking of my blogging, has been this crazy little thing where you've got this T-shirt and bumper sticker calling for President Obama's death, basically, by quoting Psalm 109, verse 8. Verse 9 says, may his wife be a widow and his children fatherless. So, you know, people got the point here. It said, pray for the president, and then quotes the psalm. What you're praying for is that he's going to die and or be killed. And what I think is that most evangelicals would be disgusted at that. But it's the cowardice of the leadership in failing to speak up that shocks me, not the people do hateful things, that the mainstream folks, you know, where's somebody like John McCain saying this is shocking, un-American, unpatriotic, and dishonorable? You know, where is the editorial board of Christianity Today magazine, or people like Marvin Olasky running World magazine saying, look, you know, we want to distance ourselves from this? But I think ordinary folks, both evangelical and non-evangelical, you know, I think our stomachs turn at this kind of stuff. We don't want to live in a country where essentially we're plunged into the sort of decisions that people have had to make in places in South America for generations, where it's just, you know, all kinds of demagoguery, Evita Peron, whatever, you know. And when we look at our own version of that emerging with people like Sarah Palin, who, for instance, calls people who don't agree with her not real Americans and divides the country into real Americans and not real Americans, of course, you know, this rings a big bell, whether it's McCarthyism or the assassination of our presidents in previous generations, whatever it may be. We just can't afford to go there. And I think most Americans understand this. And so, you know, my hope with Crazy for God was that by telling a little bit of the truth about my own life and my trajectory, I'd find some people who would want to think things through for themselves. And I think that happened a little bit with the readership it had. And, you know, my hope with Patience with God is that I can take it a step further. And look, I don't have any illusions about changing the conversation with one book, but I think we've got to chip away at this, and I think the new book does that.
And yet on the other side, you mentioned the Uganda situation a little while ago, that this extremism on the evangelical side has taken root even in Congress, even in the U.S. Senate and in Congress, with groups like the Family.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I just posted a blog on Frank Schaefer, you know, on my blog, whatever, and I think it'll be running on places, you know, other blogs within the day, maybe, where I just talk about the fact that, you know, guys like Mike Huckabee have a direct connection to what was known as the Reconstructionist movement, led by people like R.J. Rushdoony, my father, and others, who were essentially just saying, we've got to take America back for God. And in the case of Rushdoony, a step further, turn it actually into a theocracy, where he called democracy a heresy. And he said, democracy's bad. And really, you know, this is our American Taliban. And sure, not everybody in Congress is on board, but if you look, for instance, at the way Jeff Shalette has exposed the C Street,
right,
the Family, or if you look at Max Blumenthal's book, you know, Republican Gomorrah, or if you read my book, Patience with God, and you just see the direct connection between people like Rick Warren and the personality cults and demagoguery that have swept Christianity into a dustbin, I think, in terms of its actual moral value most of the time when it comes to the leadership, then you get an idea of what's at stake. And so, yeah, there's a direct connection between, for instance, what's going on in Uganda, organizations like the Family, the Reconstructionist movement, the teaching of Rush Dooney. Look, Rush Dooney said, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, he was writing about the fact that he thought that homosexuals should be killed, and that that ought to be U.S. law, and that come the revolution and when Christians take over, that's what would happen. Well, you know, he died a while back, but if he's anywhere right now where he can hear this stuff, he's going to be, you know, pleased that, you know, at least in Uganda, they're finally getting the message. And so, yeah, there's a direct connection.
Talk a little bit about what you see among religious leaders, sort of the second and third tier of religious leaders, and how they're dealing with this.
Well, you know, if you look neighborhood to neighborhood, you find a lot of people who just want to do good works, care for other people, and are very open and loving and kind. And no matter how harsh their theology is, they're usually people like my dad was, who is a man who is much better than his stated theology. I mean, the logic of my dad's theology would have been Rush Dooney, and where he took it, say, with gay people. But in practice, in the community of Labrie Fellowship that I grew up in, that I describe in some detail in my memoir, Crazy for God, you know, he actually had gay people come, and they were welcome, and he wasn't telling them to change or that, you know, they were terribly evil or anything like that. He had compassion. And so I think that on the neighborhood level, on the ordinary level of where Americans live, most Americans live, including most evangelical individuals in the second, third, fourth tier of leadership, ordinary people in the congregation, elders of their parish, you know, they would be horrified to see something like that go on the books. And yet, you know, when it comes to election time, these groups, you know, put their dollars in the tray. That tray goes off to whether it's the Mormons in Utah or people like Rick Warren. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, you know, Proposition 8 in California rolls back gay rights. And you know, so when the chips are down and you get the politicized version of what these people believe on a neighborhood basis, which is pretty tolerant and kind, unfortunately, when they get together in a mob around some state initiative, whatever it may be, it always comes down on the harsh Reconstructionist side of excluding the other. You know, whether it's the anti-immigrant fervor that you see with people like Ann Coulter and these berserk right-wingers like you know, well, what spews out of Fox News Daily or
Nice.
or Rush Limbaugh. A lot of these people themselves aren't individually evangelicals or even religious believers, but the huge chunk of their audience is. I mean, you know, if the Second Coming really did happen and everybody got raptured and all the Jews were killed, as people like John Hagee in Houston are longing for and working for, you know, why he's against peace talks in Israel, you know, Fox News would lose most of their audience because that's who those folks are, and there's a huge overlap between them. So you know, you have a mix. You have sort of out to lunch libertarians. You've got right-winger, you know, people tending towards fascism. You have evangelicals who want to save people for Jesus. But where they all overlap, if you want to just get a complete shorthand version, is, you know, those are the guys that sit down every day and believe what they're hearing on Fox News.
Of course, the current economic situation has mixed all of this with a kind of angry populism that has created the opportunity to demagogue these issues in an even more profound way.
Well, and once again, we have an absolute roadmap for how this goes and how to resolve it. It's called Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, you know, if you look at his period of history, he was called a communist and all the rest of it by all kinds of folks, including some well-known radio announcers in his time, Father Coughlin.
Father Coughlin, right?
Yeah, one of them, I mean, who were absolutely shrill, were saying it was part of a Jewish conspiracy, that he was a communist. You know, Father Coughlin actually came out in favor of Germany. I mean, if it had been up to him, we would have been fighting on the side of the Nazis and hung up Roosevelt by his heels. So, sure, we've seen this before, but we've also seen the level of hatred that we're hearing now spewing from the right result in President Kennedy being killed. Of course, it wasn't a conspiracy. I'm not saying some right-wing preacher, you know, paid to have the trigger pulled. But look, you create a certain milieu, certain things happen. You know, when there was a certain milieu about race in the South, once in a while, they'd go out to the edge of town and lynch some poor black man. When there's a certain milieu loose and you've got people wearing T-shirts sporting the same quote that Timothy McVeigh wore after the Oklahoma City bombing, saying, you know, the Tree of Liberty has to be watered by the blood of tyrants. They're walking around with a loaded assault weapon outside of Barack Obama giving a speech. You've gone to crazy land, and you're one step away from people just trawling for assassination. I mean, you know, when I listen to what Fox says and Glenn Beck says, and when I listen to Limbaugh, when I put it all together, I say, look, you know, some of this may just be legitimate politics and difference of opinion and loyal opposition, but the line gets crossed, and it gets crossed a lot these days into a place where you're saying, you know, anybody who's slightly unhinged or even just dedicated ideologically to take this stuff at face value is going to be, you know, polishing up their M16 and doing target practice. I mean, this is serious stuff, and we live in a country that has this history of political violence. So, if for nothing else, the sheer level of irresponsibility of people like Rupert Murdoch, who with billions of dollars is funding a right-wing media cabal in this country that has, you know, from the Wall Street Journal to the Times of London to Australia to the U.S. to Fox News. You know, here's a guy who single-handedly has shifted this discourse into the shrill high gear of the far right. And so you get a guy like Glenn Beck, who left to his own devices, would be barking at the moon on some lonely street corner. And instead of that, he's given a megaphone to the whole country.
How do we begin to shift this, in your view? Is it just something that the cycle has to play out, or are there specific things you think people can do?
Well, here's one, and I know it sounds self-serving, but I do hope people read Patience with God, because I think the discussion at the heart of this is a religious philosophical debate, and it has to change. I mean, ideas are where it's at, you know. If you can start addressing the ideas, it's a slow-motion movement, but you can change things. And I know that's true, because my father released books like, for instance, A Christian Manifesto in the 70s and 80s that formed the entire hard edge of the pro-life movement, the anti-abortion crusade that wound up getting abortion doctors killed. Well, we can do the same thing in reverse with things like my book, Patience with God. But then on another level, I think, look, everybody who has any platform at all, whether it's just talk to your local pastor, write a letter to the paper, or just talk about it, we've got to make it, if I can put it this way, an unfashionable kiss of death to not take a stand when the crazy radical things get said. For instance, I'll give you an example. You know, anybody that sees somebody walking around with a T-shirt essentially calling for the death of the president ought to go up to that person. I'm not advocating fistfights, and just say, hey, listen, if it was up to me, I'd be turning you over to the Secret Service right now. You can't do this. This is America. We don't call for the death of our leaders. That's not democratic debate, even if it's on a one-on-one level. People have to be challenged. And guys like Rick Warren, the editorial board of Christianity Today magazine, Marvin Olasky with his far-right World magazine, these guys purporting to be respectable leaders in these movements, you know, John McCain, the Republican leadership, these guys all need to be challenged and told, look, if you're not going to stand up on this stuff, we're going to hold you responsible. You are culpable because you are the people in whose name these folks are ranting and railing, saying, you know, vote Republican. Well, you're the Republicans, or you're the evangelical leadership. Where are you on this? Do you really want Barack Obama to be gunned down? Do you really want to be living in a country where torture is legal, but health care for everyone is not? And they have to be challenged. And I think the silence of the so-called respectable leadership, you know, if we look back in history, is always the key to understanding why the loonies are able to take over the asylum. And you know, one doesn't want to draw cheap and easy and references to Germany and all the rest of it, but it doesn't take much imagination to understand that a failure of leadership on the part of religious leaders in history, whether it's been popes or bishops or preachers or whoever, often leads to a real moral decline, and we're in one. I mean, we are in a tailspin right now where complete fraudulent kind of people are getting away with telling lies. I'll just take one more example. Where was everybody when, on the Christian right, who believes in truth, they say, when Sarah Palin stood up and told a barefaced lie in the name of her own Christianity and politics, saying that there would be death panels if health care was reformed? Where was everybody? I didn't hear a peep out of them. So I think that's one of the keys. One of the keys is whether it's the media, you know, whether it is individuals, whether it's letter writers, whether it's people asking questions at public meetings, we have to at least challenge the barefaced lies and just say, hey, listen, you know, this is beyond the pale. And, Obama was born in America. There'll be no death panels. He is not trying to help gays take over the world. You know, these are just straight out lies, and all they're doing is generating hate. And beyond that, you guys are dupes, because you're really just the tools of people like Dick Armey and other lobbyists for the insurance industry. And they're using the foot soldiers, the people like my father and I, as I describe in my memoir, Crazy for God, you know, put in place. And even some of the same rhetoric. I mean, they lifted the death panels thing straight out of our books, because that's what we predicted would happen if you legalized abortion.
Frank Schaefer, the book is Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. Frank, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
It's always a pleasure, anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you.